let's talk about books. How are you doing?
I'm great. Do you want to talk about some books?
I guess that's what we're here to do. So tell me about what you've been reading.
The first book I want to talk about, you're going to be super happy to hear about, is The Bride Test by Helen Huang.
I feel like I'm equal parts like excited to hear about it and like super jealous that you got to read it already.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I did send you a text when I first got it off of NetGalley and was like, look what I'm reading. And I feel like you weren't happy for me. It was mostly jealousy.
Yeah, in the moment I was maybe overwhelmed by the jealousy of you getting to read it so early. Yeah,
right. So it's coming out May 7th. So Sarah and everyone else will be able to read it then. But
it's
the
such a long wait.
A few months. You'll be okay. The reason we're so excited about this book is it is the second book by Helen Huang, who wrote The Kiss Quotient, which we both loved when it came out last year. Amazing, amazing book. Probably a lot of people are already aware of it because it was like very hyped all over the place when it came out. Just this really cute romance. And I'm not a big romance reader, as we have discussed before on this podcast a few times. So, you know, if I like a romance, I feel like that's a pretty good recommendation because I don't, or maybe it's not because I don't read a lot of romance. So maybe my taste means nothing. Oh, no.
I mean, you have good taste in this one at least.
Okay. All right.
Because this is a fantastic romance, and I read romance.
So. All right, fair enough. Yes, let's go. Okay, so The Bride Test is a really fun one. It picks up with some of the characters that we first met in The Kiss Quotient, which, as Sarah can attest, is a pretty common thing to do in romance novels, is to kind of have a sequel that will take the story of one of the secondary characters and tell it.
I'm going to interject here with, like, some backstory. So when we first read Kiss Quotient, there was like a reference to The Bride Test, and I said, oh, this is about gonna be like about the brother Kai. And Rachel's like, I don't think the sequel is in the same universe. And I was like, I promise you, Rachel, the sequel is in the same universe with the same people, because that is how romance works.
Yes, and of course, as we all know, you were right, although you were wrong about one thing, because it's Kai's not his brother. Kai is Michael's cousin. Which was what I was looking up because I forgot Michael's name.
He's Michael's cousin, but he's the other guy's brother. His name I've forgotten.
Okay, yeah, Quan, but that's totally not what you
said. Quan, yeah, I was talking about Quan, not Michael.
Yeah, sure.
I know he's Michael's cousin. He's Quan's brother.
Of course. Anyway, so this book picks up with Michael's cousin, Kai, who is autistic, like Stella was in The Kiss Quotient. And Kai's mother, so Michael's aunt, has decided to go to Vietnam to find him the perfect girl, thus the title, The Bride Test, because he's just really not interested in dating, and I guess she wants some grandbabies. So enter Esme Tran, a mixed-race woman living in the slums of Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam, with her mother, her grandmother, and her young daughter. And she basically meets Kai's mother and decides just to take a crazy leap of faith and go to America to meet Kai, even though she's not really into the idea of arranged marriage or anything. But she's really hoping to find a better life for herself and for her daughter, or at the very least to spend a summer in America, because Kai's mother basically promises, you know, just meet him, just go there, work for me at my restaurant for the summer, get to know him, have some fun, make some money. And if it doesn't work out at the end of the summer, then you just go home. No big deal. No harm, no foul. And she's like, well, that's kind of a no-loss proposition, so sure. Kai, unsurprisingly, is not so thrilled about his mother's plan and has absolutely no intention of marrying Esme because, this is the sad part, is he actually believes he's not capable of love, which kind of has a whole backstory thing in the book that is explained for why he thinks that. This tragedy that happened when he was younger, a friend that he lost and really, really affected him. But then, to both Esme and Kai's surprise, obviously this is a love story, they begin to fall for each other. But then, you know, there are all these cultural differences and, of course, Kai's inability to see his own capacity for love and all these things get in the way. And yeah, it's just perfect and adorable and lovely. And honestly, I had faith that this would be a great follow-up to The Kiss Quotient, but you always worry a little on a sophomore novel, and it was so perfect. It was the best follow-up to The Kiss Quotient that I think could possibly have been. It actually made me cry happy tears at the end. Like, wow. That was how cute and sweet it was. And, I mean, I am a crier, so that's not...
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
Not saying that much, but still, I feel like happy tears takes a little more than, you know, sad tears.
Yeah, I get sad tears a lot. Happy tears are more rare.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so it's just, it's so cute. If you love the Kiss Quotient, you have to read The Bride Test. I love Kai and Esme so much. They were just adorable. It still, I will say, has a few fairly explicit scenes. Anyone who has read the Kiss Quotient knows that that one was very steamy. This one's a little less so, but still, you know, if that's not your thing, this may not be the book for you. But so good. If you love the Kiss Quotient, you must read it. May 7th, do it.
I'm so excited.
I know. You're already, like, the day of May 7th, your plans have already just been, that day is blank on your calendar.
Yeah.
You're just, that's like, for reading, get home from work.
The Bride Test.
Read The Bride Test.
Yeah. That's the plan for that day.
Exactly. Okay, so tell me what you've been reading.
So, we talked in January about our book goals, and my big goal for the year is to read some books I already own.
Yes, a good one.
So, I have made my first sort of work towards meeting that goal. And I read Welcome to Night Vale by Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner, which...
Another excellent podcast.
I didn't
podcast.
Just, like, listen to the podcast. Right, it is a podcast. I didn't just listen to the podcast and call it a book. There's a book called Welcome to Night Vale as well. I did listen to the audiobook of the book, though, which is narrated by Cecil Baldwin, who is also the narrator of the podcast.
Even
so
better.
It is... a little like listening to the podcast, just
long form.
If you do the audiobook, you have the same narrator, but it's quite different. It's not in a radio format at all, like the podcast itself is. Although there are chapters interspersed throughout that are like an excerpt of a community radio thing.
Oh, I love that.
It focuses on sort of two women who live in Night Vale, Jackie and Diane. And Diane, someone who you hear about a little in the podcast, her son Josh changes forms. And she's on she's on like the PTA. And Jackie owns the pawn shop. I wasn't sure how I would feel about it because I love the podcast, but how is it going to work as a book? And that's right. Why I've put off reading it for so long, because it's been out for a while. And
you've had both of the books for a while.
Well, this is just a single book, but
several of the books.
I have all the books they've written and I haven't. So that's embarrassing. But I'm making up for it now. Anyway, it's a great book. It totally does the podcast justice. It really builds out the world in ways that the podcast can't. Like, there are things that it doesn't make sense. They don't come up on, there's no way for them to come up on radio. And so Jackie and Diane sort of make a journey into the library. So you get to, which is a whole thing in Night Vale. And yeah, it's just, it gets to build out the world in a way that the podcast can't, while still getting the feeling of the podcast.
Yeah.
And then I read It Devours, also by Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner, which is their second book, sort of set in the world of Night Vale. This one follows Nilanjana and Daryl, and it's quite different from Welcome to Night Vale. Welcome to Night Vale, it's really about these characters you already know. It's fleshing out the world. It's a story that's, like, very familiar. And It Devours has some of those elements, but it's also sort of about, like, the intersection of faith and science in some ways. Because Nilanjana is a scientist, and Daryl is a member of the Congregation of the Smiling God.
Excellent.
And all of these things are, like, if you listen to the podcast, these are things you're familiar with. If you don't, I guess I should say Night Vale is sort of this casually horrifying place. Everyone's very casual, but like all this crazy stuff, otherworldly stuff is happening all the time, and everyone's just sort of like living their lives around it.
It's weird, but in a really wonderful way, basically.
Yeah. I love both the books. They're great. Like I said, they're both narrated by Cecil Baldwin, who is a great narrator. So if you listen to the podcast, I think you're definitely going to enjoy these books. If you don't listen to the podcast, you'll probably enjoy the books too. I don't think you
might just be a little confused
to listen to the podcast. Like, there is explanation given, but a lot of the stuff is sort of things that are referenced to the podcast. So you might want to like check that out first before diving into a full book and see if it's your thing.
Right.
But I loved them both. I think they're great. So tell me about what else you're reading.
So the other book I want to talk about, I actually stayed up way too late last night finishing. Oops. And it is called The Love and Lies of Rukhsana Ali by Sabina Khan. And it's a bit of a departure from the other books we've talked about. We've been mostly talking about light, happy-ish reads. This one's a lot darker. So it's about Rukhsana Ali, maybe you guessed from the title. And Rukhsana is a teenager living in Seattle with her Bengali Muslim family, secretly dating a white girl named Ariana. So that's two strikes right there. One, because her girlfriend is not Bengali, and two, because being gay is a big taboo in her community. And she's really struggling because her white friends don't understand why she's hiding her sexuality from her parents. And then at the same time, she feels a little out of place in her family, obviously, because she's keeping this big secret. And she really doesn't want to keep a secret. You know, she wants to be able to be fully herself. But then when Rukhsana's mother finds her kissing her girlfriend, everything just kind of falls apart. So her family, her parents, and herself go on a trip to visit her grandmother in Bangladesh. But things soon go from bad to worse when Rukhsana realizes that her parents actually brought her here to find her a husband. And fast. Like, basically, they're not going to bring her home until she's engaged. So basically, they're, you know, just not able to accept their daughter for who she is. But then Rukhsana finds kind of surprising support and understanding from some of her family members, and she begins to learn a bit more about her grandmother's past and how difficult her marriage was and some of her mother's childhood, all these things that she didn't know about her family, these secrets. And then she finds a surprising ally and one of the suitors her parents have, you know, just kind of foisted upon her. So yeah, it's this really, really hard read, obviously, because it's dealing really, really heavily with homophobia, obviously with some very sensitive cultural and religious issues. Rukhsana's parents go to some really, really extreme measures to try to, quote-unquote, cure their daughter. Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty heartbreaking, obviously. And in addition to that, there is some violence against LGBTQ people. So basically just major overarching trigger warning. Yeah. I definitely wouldn't recommend it for anyone who might be affected by any of those things. Obviously, dark read. But that said, it was a really, really good read. And I enjoyed it despite all of those really hard topics, because it was well written and the characters were really interesting. And miraculously, the book actually does have a happy ending. And in some ways, I didn't expect, to be honest. I kind of saw that it would probably have at least a somewhat happy ending, but I didn't think it would happen in the ways that it did. So yeah, it deals really heavily with cultural differences and with empathy and understanding. So really, really good read, but definitely a hard read, though I'm very glad I read it.
Awesome. It sounds very interesting.
Also, I finished Shadow and Bone this morning, and
yes,
it was so good. For anybody who doesn't know, that's the first book in Leigh Bardugo's Grishaverse trilogy, and yeah, that was amazing. Stayed up way too late last night finishing one book, then woke up this morning and finished another.
Nice.
So I feel like we're just now hitting March, rounding out of February, and I feel like it's around this time of year when people really start to have trouble with reading slumps.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a few months since the new year. We all made our resolutions. We talked about it on the podcast. Sarah's obviously doing a good job with hers. And I don't know, I feel like, you know, you start out feeling really good. You're so on top of your reading and everything. But now we've had a few months in, life starts to happen, things get crazier, and we find ourselves falling into the dreaded reading slumps. So,
yes.
I think we both thought it would be a good time to kind of discuss reading slumps, how they affect us, and how the two of us as readers try to deal with them.
It's also good timing since our last episode was about The Scribe, and I mentioned I've read The Scribe a lot of times. And the reason I've read The Scribe...
Did we say how many? Did we get a number on that?
I don't actually know how many, because they didn't do a good job of... Because Goodreads, when I first read it, didn't allow you to, like, track rereads, so I don't actually know.
Are we
how
talking
many
like double digits?
Not in double digits, but definitely I guess like 5 or 6 times.
Okay, that's a decent number.
And the reason I've read it so many times is it's one of my go-to reading slump books. I have a few series I return to over and over again, and this is one of them that I read when I'm in a reading slump.
Gotta have some of those. And I think you've talked to me about this before. You, in particular, are drawn to romance and rereading romance books when you're in a bit of a slump, right?
Yeah. Yes. And I don't always even reread. Sometimes if it's really bad, I'll, like, just go find a random romance series that, like, just seems read interesting, all of it. And I'll just read all of it. I've done that. This is years ago, but I read, I don't even remember who it's by anymore, but it was some sort of Highland historical romance thing. So Scottish historical romance. Read all of it. Like, and it was a bunch of books. But normally
is it even a reading slump if you're having a slump and then you just read like 20 books?
So that's what normally happens during my reading slumps, no joke, as I read like 10 books during the reading slump. So I actually end up reading more books because I'm rereading books super quickly. I say generally I return to paranormal romance. That's a genre I like. I have a lot of authors in that genre I really like, Elizabeth Hunter being a huge one for me. So I reread those books. And when I'm in a reading slump, I have to reread the whole series because I get into it again. And usually by like the last few books, I'm just like ready to be done with it and get back to reading other stuff again. But I have to finish it again because I'm like,
You almost like you're worn out on other books. So then you just wear yourself out on a romance series until you're ready to move on to anything else.
Yeah. And also what sometimes happens, the other reason I've read The Scribe a lot, and this isn't a reading something, but if a new book comes out, I'll read the new book, and then I'll be like, I want to relive the whole thing again. And then I start the series over from the beginning to relive the whole series.
I reread books sometimes. Not quite as often anymore, I would say. Harry Potter was always my go-to when I was younger, like particularly in high school and college. That was the one, I always call that my comfort read. Like, if I was stressed or just, like, didn't really feel as much like reading for fun, especially in college, you know, because I was reading so much for school.
Right.
So, yeah, Harry Potter was often my go-to. A few others that I would reread pretty often because they were just kind of, like, books that I was very familiar with and made me happy. Like, Hitchhiker's Guide, Hunger Games, Daughter of Smoke and Bone a few times, things like that. Books that, you know, I kind of knew what was going to happen and made me happy to reread, you know, and I think that's one thing that can be really useful in a reading slump when you're just not, whether you don't have the energy or the time or, you know, whatever, it can be nice to go back to a book or a series that you've already read and revisit it because it, especially if it's one that you love and you know you love, because it can kind of help you find that magic again.
Yeah. I also, for me, I need whatever I'm trying to read to get out of a reading slump has to be something that is purely for fun. And for me, that's what romance normally is. Like, sometimes I'll really bog myself down a really long book that I feel that I should read.
Yeah.
And then I can return to a romance. It's short. I've probably read it a few times, so I'm going to get through it really fast. And it's just going to be fun for me. And it's not going to achieve any of my reading goals. I'm not going to post it all over Goodreads or Litzy or anything. It's just for me.
Yeah.
And for me to read something for fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's another one of the tricks I'll kind of go to sometimes, particularly if it's not as bad of a reading slump, if it's just kind of a little bit of a dip, you know, I'll kind of go to my TBR and try to find a book that I'm really excited for, something that I feel very certain I'm going to love, you know, based on reviews and what I know about it and everything. And then it can kind of lift me up out of it a little because, like you said, then you're just doing something for fun. You're finding a new book that you love. And sometimes, kind of conversely from what I said about rereading something familiar, being surprised can actually help, you know, because you're reading something new and interesting, so it's keeping you really engaged. So sometimes for minor slumps, that can be really helpful for me too.
Yeah.
The other thing that I do a lot for reading slumps, and this is now I'm moving on to my tips for like at least what works for me for the bad ones.
Yeah.
Because I've had some bad ones before, especially as someone, you know, who reads not only for fun, but for work. Like, I read a lot and sometimes kind of intensely. And sometimes I do get into phases where I'm just like, I can't do this, you know, and you kind of have to try to get back to the heart of what makes you love reading. And so one of the things that I'll do when I'm feeling like that, particularly because when I'm not reading, I kind of feel like I'm not being productive.
Yeah.
Like I'm not doing what I need to be doing with my life. So one of the tricks I'll use is comics because they're so much shorter, you know, that I can sit down and read a whole volume of comic. And then I kind of feel like I've done something. And they also do tend to be, you know, I'll pick out one that's very fun, like from a series that I like or a character that I like. I read some of the X-23 comics recently, or Lumberjanes is always a really cute one. So, you know, I'll find one that I think will be really good and keep me engaged. And then I can finish it in one sitting. And then I feel like I've gotten something done. You know, I feel like I've made a dent in my reading. Yeah. And sometimes that sense of productivity, and maybe it's not like instant, like I read one comic and it's better, but it can like help me start to get back into my groove.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think I feel similarly, like reading a fun comic or just something short.
Yeah.
Reading a short story or novella can also help, because sometimes what's happened for me especially is I've read too many long books and I just can't commit to another long
book.
I need something
short.
Sometimes
you just something bite-sized.
Yes. Definitely.
The other trick, kind of similar to rereading, that I do, I don't know if it's really a trick, I think this is more just my coping mechanism for bad reading slumps, is fan fiction. Which is kind of funny because that's still reading, you know,
right.
But sometimes if I just cannot force myself to read a new book, or if I'm even not interested in rereading an old book, I'll just go back to fan fiction that I love. So
yeah.
I'll find one, like an old one that I have saved on my phone or on my Kindle or something like that, where I not only already know the story because I've read it several times, but I also know the characters, because that's why I searched out the fanfiction in the first place. And so then I can reread that, and it's just fun and light. And I mean, even if it's not necessarily light, because I do read a lot of angsty fanfic, as we've discussed before on this podcast.
Yes.
But you know, I know what I'm getting into. I'm choosing what to read. It's one that I love. And so that can be nice too, so that I'm still reading, but it's something, again, kind of like what you said, not doing it for anyone else, you know, because the fanfiction I read, it's not counting toward my yearly book goals. I'm not posting about it anywhere because, you know, we just don't generally post the fanfiction that we read.
Yeah.
So it's not for anybody but myself.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think as far as tips go, at least that work for us for helping out of slumps, you know, changing it up can be really helpful. Reading something different or new, kind of mixing up the genres or the lengths of what you're reading, or the opposite, reading something really familiar and comforting, kind of depending on how your slump is going and what you need, or even how long it's been going on. I've had some slumps that have lasted like months, or I've even had like some years where it was just like not a good reading year.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes something familiar comforting is what you need. Sometimes something short and fun that you can finish in one sitting and just helps you feel like you've accomplished something. But honestly, I think the biggest piece of advice I have personally for reading slumps, I don't know if this is how you feel about it, sometimes you have to let them run their course.
Yeah.
Which
I was about to say, like, my other tip is, like, don't beat yourself up about having one.
It sucks, but so often I feel like when you get into that headspace, you just have to let it pass. Because trying to force yourself out of it is... And I think that's why none of our tips involve, you know, like, picking up Don Quixote, you know, that's been on your shelf for five years and finally
this
trying to,
not,
you know...
the time to tackle your TBR.
Or no,
like,
exactly. Unless
whatever,
you've got fun books on your TBR. This is the time to just try and find your joy in reading again.
Yeah,
you
this
know,
is not the
because,
time to read the books that you think you should read. Like, you're
right.
Like, oh,
don't
I should
try
read a
to
classic.
Read a million books.
No.
Don't try to read a book that's going to be challenging mentally or emotionally or anything that. Pick something that's going to be fun. Pick something that you're going to enjoy. Pick something that won't take you a long time to read, or that will, but that you know you'll love. Because honestly, I think so much about slumps is... it does have to do with exhaustion and having burnout from reading too much or too hard, or just life sometimes.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to give yourself a break and be like, okay, this is where I'm at right now, you know, and maybe I'm mostly going to be watching Netflix right now. I went through a slump last year where I wasn't feeling great and I just couldn't seem to read. And so I rewatched the Lord of the Rings movies and it was great. And I still felt like I was doing something vaguely literary, right? But like,
yeah.
It was just fun. So sometimes, even if it's not reading, just cut yourself a little bit of slack.
I did think of one other tip that sometimes works for me. And this one's a little hit or miss, but sometimes audiobooks can work for me when I just can't sit down to read a book. Just like finding
that's
a short audiobook that I can listen to while I'm cleaning or something.
Oh, yeah.
And that
I
can
love
sometimes
to
like
listen to audiobooks
back
while
into
I'm cleaning,
it.
While I'm working out, just doing chores around the house. That one's great.
Yeah. I will say, like, again, that's one where you don't want to check out, like, a 48-hour audiobook, and those do exist. I've seen them. This is not the time for that.
If you
for
have trouble with attention span
audiobook.
Or focus, that one may not work as well for you. I know audiobooks probably wouldn't work for me in a slump, because I do have trouble focusing on audiobooks sometimes, but I love that tip, and I think it probably is a great one for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I'll also say that's one where, like, if you know there are certain narrators you like... this is the time to search them out, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe
so
listen to some of those Night Vale books.
Yeah. There are a few where I think, like, the narrator is, like, very good.
Lin-Manuel Miranda has done a few, so.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he'd be a great audiobook narrator.
Oh, my gosh. He's so good. Highly recommend.
OK. Okay, I'll have to see an audiobook he's narrated and then read it for that.
Yeah. Well, with that, I think we should probably wrap it up.
That sounds good to me.
So I would like to give a big thank you to Sahara Sky for the use of our theme song, Never Long Time Goes By, from the album Escapism.
And thanks to all of you for listening. You can get in touch with us by tweeting at UnassignedPod over on Twitter, emailing us at UnassignedReadingPod@gmail.com, or going to our website, UnassignedReadingPod.com.
And we'd especially love it if you left a rating and review of the podcast over on iTunes. We've gotten some really, really lovely ones from listeners so far, and seeing new ones makes our day.
Not to mention, it helps other people find the show.
That's right. We will be back later this month for a discussion of Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett on the 29th.
And the TV adaptation is coming out this spring on Amazon, so now is the perfect time to read it. Now go read some books.